I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome back Rick Edelman. Rick is widely regarded as one of the top advisors in the field. He was ranked the nation's number one independent financial advisor three times by Barron's and is the 2017 recipient of the IARFC's Lauren Dunton Memorial Award, which is awarded to a person who has made a substantial contribution to the financial services profession and/or the financial interests of the public. For 30 years, Rick has worked to teach everyday people about personal finance. Now, with his ninth book, The Truth About Your Future, Rick reveals how exponential technologies will alter virtually every aspect of your life with profound implications for your personal finances. Rick, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you. Always a pleasure, David. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Rick, in our last episode, we talked a lot about how to be known as the best resource to help your ideal customers and to help you, the business owner, smash plateaus. And now in your most recent book, The Truth About Your Future, you write not just about how to smash plateaus, you teach people how to prepare themselves for change that is brought on by exponential technologies, innovations that are advancing at rates of exponential growth. How do you think those exponential technologies affect our planning? And why do we need to change the way we think about planning?
Well, it's a big question, David. You're asking the right one. The big issue is that advancing technologies are going to change virtually every aspect of life on our planet. And most of us are unfamiliar with the changes that are coming and unprepared for the speed with which these changes are coming. We're talking about such technologies as robotics, artificial intelligence, machine learning, 3D printing, big data, nanotechnology, bioinformatics, bionics, energy innovation, even financial services and education innovation. All of these and others are going to radically alter virtually everything that we do, everything we know, everything we have. And many people are unprepared for this, and as a result, they don't realize that the financial planning that they're engaging in, and we know a lot of Americans aren't doing any planning at all, but even those who are engaging in financial planning have financial plans that are obsolete because the plans are based on the kind of world we used to live in as opposed to the kind of world we're going to live in.
I know you've done some pretty exhaustive research to write the book, and I think it's a fascinating book and a real eye-opener. What's one example of kind of technology you're talking about and how that may impact the way we think, behave, react, and plan?
Well, it starts with medical innovation, longevity, pure and simple. If you ask the typical American, how long do you think you're going to live? Most folks say they're going to live into their 80s or 90s. That's not true for the vast majority of people alive today. Odds instead are that you're going to live to 110 or 120. And that changes everything. Because a lot of folks have the attitude that they're going to retire in their 60s or 70s and die in their 80s or 90s, and they're kind of planning for that economically. But if you're going to live to 110 or 120, there's no way that you can retire at 60 or 70 and be able to afford a 50-year retirement. So longevity changes everything. You're going to need to continue working. The notion of retirement, as we've come to understand it in the 20th century, retirement is gone. It's an obsolete term. It's a dinosaur. It's not going to exist into the future. It didn't exist in the 1900s. It was a 20th century innovation, or the 1800s rather. Retirement, you know, if you were alive, you worked. You either grew or shot your food. And if you needed to work to live, retirement came into being in the 20th century, in the 1900s, and it's not going to exist in the 21st century. So we have to recognize first the notion that you're not going to retire in your 60s or 70s. Now that scares people and upsets them because their attitude is, you mean I have to keep working forever? I was looking forward to a retirement. It's not nearly as bad as you suspect. In fact, it's really quite exciting.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was going to say, I know fewer and fewer people who are retired.
Yeah. I mean, there's no point to retirement. And the reason people aren't retiring is not just because they need the money. It's because they're healthy enough. They're vital enough. They want to keep contributing. Most people love what they do, and they really want to keep on doing it. And why retire to play golf or garden or play bridge? I mean, that stuff gets old and boring after a while. And people want to reinvent themselves, go back to school and learn new skills, new knowledge, and develop that into an income-producing activity. And that's the good news here, is that you're going to be able to keep doing those things because you're going to be healthy enough. You're not only going to live a long time, you're going to be healthier in the future than you are today, again, because of medical technology. It's not merely improving mortality, it's improving morbidity, meaning that at age 95, you'll be healthier than you are at age 55 today. We're developing so many technologies in nanotechnology and biotechnology through CRISPR, which is a major gene editing program that was developed in 2015. We can now alter DNA. We can remove genes that are defective. We can insert genes that are missing. And as a result, over the next 20 years, we're going to eliminate heart disease, respiratory illness, diabetes, obesity, even aging. Scientists have discovered itself as a disease, and they can cure it. They can reverse it. They've already done this with mice in Japan. So the future is going to be healthier than you can ever imagine. And that means if you're, you know, think about how you are at age 45, 50, 55, 60, you're perfectly healthy to be able to continue generating an income, and you'll want to continue to do that for as long as you live. Now, here's the downside. Here's the problem. If you're going to be healthy enough to work and living long enough to keep doing it, great, but will your job still exist? And that's the other piece of the pie. Robotics and artificial intelligence are going to eliminate most of the jobs that currently exist. Three separate studies, all done independently, Oxford University, Pricewaterhouse, PwC now, and McKinsey, they have all independently concluded that about half the jobs in America are going to disappear over the next 20 years. Because of automation. Between robotics and artificial intelligence, many of the occupations, and I don't just mean ditch diggers. We know robots are going to take away the dull, the boring, the repetitive jobs like factory workers, but I'm also talking about white-collar jobs. We now have an AI-powered piece of software that is now practicing law. We have computers that are serving as teaching assistants in graduate schools at the Georgia Institute of Technology. We now, nobody goes to travel agents anymore. It's a free app on your phone. So we have a huge array of jobs that are going to vanish and disappear. So put those two together. On the one hand, you're going to need to continue earning an income into your 70s, 80s, 90s, and you're going to be healthy enough to work, but many jobs won't even exist. So how do we reconcile those two issues? Again, the solution is technology. Although it's true that many jobs are going to go away due to automation, technology also creates jobs. It's hard to believe, hard for us to remember, that the iPhone is only 10 years old. You remember, David, life without an iPhone?
Well, I actually do, but you're right. It certainly has transformed the way we all behave.
We now have 300,000 people in this country working full-time as app developers for smartphones. They're making an average of $100,000 a year. So we have 300,000 Americans working at a job, making a really nice income, working where they want, when they want, doing what they want in a field that didn't exist a decade ago. And that's the nature of technology. So we don't need to fear that massive unemployment will occur. What instead is going to happen is massive redeployment. And we've gone through this before. Remember the agricultural era. In 1900, half of all Americans worked on a farm. Well, those shifted into the factories. And in 1950, we had about a third of America working in factories. Well, today we only have 1% of Americans working on farms. We only have 3% of Americans working in factories. It doesn't mean we have 97% unemployment. It means we've redeployed those jobs. People are now in the information age, the technology age, working at home and in offices instead of factories and farms. So people have to be retrained. Now, the last couple of times we went through this, we had a generation to fix it. The movement from farm to factory and factory to office occurred over decades. This time around, it's going to occur within a matter of years, which means people are going to have to work really fast, really hard to get retrained and reeducated into a career that they currently know nothing about, how a travel agent becomes an app developer. And that means the notion of college gets totally turned on its ear. It's no longer about getting a college degree. It's now about lifelong learning, because much of the education you get in college is obsolete within only a few years. So people who thought that they could get their kid into college, let the kid graduate in 4 or 6 years and live a life merrily ever after, no way. Instead, our children and even ourselves are going to have to continue to get educated on an ongoing basis, retrained, reskilled, because the nature of information is changing so rapidly. So what it all comes down to is this, and this is, I guess, is the short answer to a very long response of your very simple question, David, is what does it all mean? We're going from a linear lifeline to a cyclical one, meaning what we're used to is the old linear lifeline. You get born, you go to school, you get a job, you retire, you die. One thing after another, linearly.
Mm-hmm.
That's being replaced by a cyclical lifeline where you're going to go to school and get a job, but then you're going to go back to school and get a new job. Then you're going to do it again, go back to school, get yet another new job. Then you're going to take a sabbatical, not for a few weeks or months, but for several years. And after your sabbatical, you'll go back to school again and you'll get a new degree. Already, the Department of Labor says that the average 35-year-old has had 8 jobs. So we're changing jobs on average every 2 years in this country at this point, and that trend is going to continue. So forget about retirement. You're not going to have to wait till you're 70 years old for that round-the-world cruise. You'll do it in your 40s. A lot of people lament missing their child's, you know, younger years because of work. Well, take the time off and be a stay-at-home parent for the 3 or 4 years that you want to be around your kids and they want you to be around. You know, when they're teenagers, they won't want you around. Go back to work then. So we're going to be in a cyclical lifeline, and we're going to do that forever. So retirement as we know it is gone.
So, Rick, do you think that what you've just described has some implications for the way we not just think about the kind of work we're going to do, or how, more like how we work, which to me means what is what you've just described, or how does it relate to our traditional notion of perhaps things like employment, entrepreneurship, leadership? It sounds to me like in the past, those have generally been in separate buckets.
Right.
Right. Either right. You're an employee or an entrepreneur. Either you're right. A leader or you're a follower.
Right.
And what I'm hearing from you is perhaps these are going to be much more integrated in the future.
Very much so. We will be both. We will be both leaders and followers. We will be both employees and employers. And here's how. The technological environment has made it easier than ever to make money. We can engage in an activity on a part-time basis with very low capital that takes very little time, that doesn't take a lot of knowledge, where the fundamental infrastructure is provided for us, that allows us to work when we want, where we want, for whom we want, doing what we want, for as long as we want. And this is called the sharing economy, otherwise known as the gig economy. And what we're seeing is a fundamental shift from the New York model of employment to the Hollywood model. Let me explain what I mean. The New York model is what most of us are familiar with. We have a job. You know, we earn a W-2. We have one employer. We work full-time at that job. We go to that office. We go to the same place every day. We work with the same people every day, doing the same thing every day, and we do that for our entire career. That's the very traditional methodology, what we used to call the womb to tomb employment. You get a job at IBM at age 20, you retire at age 65, they give you a gold watch and a pension. That's the old methodology, the New York model. That's being replaced by the Hollywood model. In Hollywood, you have a group of people who come together for a short period of time to do a specific project. They're making a movie, so you have a director and a producer and a writer. You have a composer, you have actors, you have set designers, costume designers, you have caterers and limo drivers and publicists and so on. And they all come together to do this project. And when the project is finished, they leave, they scatter, they go off to the next project. In many cases, they're engaging in many projects simultaneously. So they don't have a single W-2 from one employer. They have a multitude of 1099s. From a variety of sources, and they're acting as their own boss. They are, in essence, self-employed. They are providing contract services to a variety of clients all at the same time. And that is what we're going to see more and more Americans engaging in the future. Already, 20% of America's workforce is making a living doing this. And it's going to increase in its frequency because the internet makes it really easy to do it. Look at Uber drivers. People who would never think of driving a cab for a career are earning money as an Uber driver. People who would never think of opening a hotel are renting a room in their house as Airbnb hosts. So we're finding it really easy to make money on a part-time basis. The internet makes it so easy to do, and more people are going to do it than ever.
So how does all this, going back to your own area of expertise, how does that impact the way we should be thinking about our personal finances and doing some planning?
Well, that's pretty profound as a financial advisor. And that was the basis of my wanting to write my book, The Truth About Your Future. I wanted to know, how do I need to change the advice we give our clients? And how do we need to change how we deliver that advice? And it took me 8 years to engage in this research and ultimately write my book, which just came out a month or two ago, and it's already a New York Times bestseller. And what it comes down to is that most of the financial planning assumptions are invalid. The life expectancy that most planners use is invalid. They're telling their clients they're going to live to 85 or 90 or 95. That's incorrect. They're telling them they're going to retire at 65 or 70. That's incorrect. They're telling them that they're going to have to save for long-term care costs. For most people, that's not true, because medical science is going to eliminate all the causes of long-term care services. So you don't need to waste money on long-term care insurance. Meanwhile, people are being told that they're going to have to continue spending money on auto insurance and automobiles. That's not true. Self-driving cars are going to eliminate the need for you to ever buy a car in the future. You're not going to pay for auto insurance either. Auto companies are going to pay for the insurance themselves. Audi has already made that announcement. Audi has already said when they introduce a self-driving vehicle, they will own the insurance liability, not you. And people say, well, that's crazy. How can they afford to do that? Well, Sony does that with your TV. I mean, your TV breaks, it's under warranty, and they pay for the repairs. And Audi has said they're going to do the same thing for your car. So auto insurance goes away. And we can go on and on and on. College has to radically change. Telling people that they need to save a couple hundred grand to get their kids into college is crazy, because college is becoming free. Instead, we need to save money not for college, but for lifelong learning, because it will be necessary to engage in education over the course of your lifetime. And that means that while you're in school, learning your new career, you have income interruption. So we need to figure out how to maintain your lifestyle so you can pay your bills while you're not earning an income, but preparing to earn your next gig. So the nature of the financial planning process has to radically alter to adjust for the new type of lifestyle people are going to be engaging in. And then there's estate planning. When finally you do pass away, we're dealing with the fact we're going to have not just two or three generations alive, but six or seven generations in your family of a wide variety of family trees. You're going to have, because we already do have in society, a great number of babies being born out of wedlock. So marriage itself is now an issue. We have same-sex couples. We have a huge increase in adoption. We have all kinds of issues that the original estate planning environment never really anticipated. And then we have digital assets. We're doing all of our finances online, online banking, online investment management. We're doing more and more of an insurance online and our mortgages online. We have much of our social activities online now. You know, long gone are photo albums in the closet. Now all your photos are on Facebook and Pinterest and other social media sites. If you die, who gets access to all of your online accounts? Many websites, when they hear you've died, they close the account and they destroy it, which means your lifelong collection of photos and music and movies has been lost. Your access to your bank account information is gone. Your family can't get access to your banking information because they don't know the passwords. They don't know the security codes, such as, you know, what was the name of your favorite pet growing up? So we have to pay attention to our digital assets as part of our estate planning. So technology is causing us to make radical changes in the financial planning advice and strategies that we give to our clients. And I haven't even mentioned yet the elephant in the room, which is investment management and the changes we need to make there.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, we have to recognize that as financial planners, most of us tell our clients to own diversified portfolios. You want to own stocks, but you also want to have other asset classes like bonds and real estate and stuff like that. But we also tend to say to our clients that as you age, you reduce the amount of exposure to stocks. Well, if you're not aging, you're simply growing older, but you're not really aging, do we need to reduce the equity allocation? as rapidly as thought. It could well be possible that the 95-year-old should have just as heavy an equity allocation as they did when they were 50. So we need to change the asset allocation model that we're recommending to the client. And then you get into the issues of what stocks are you going to be recommending to that client? Because according to several studies, the typical company that exists today in the S&P 500 will not exist in 20 years. That back 100 years ago, the average company in America in the S&P 500 had a 65-year life expectancy. Today, it's down to 15 years. The best illustration I can give you is Kodak. Kodak, 2012, one of the oldest brands in the world, 135-year-old company, one of the best known and best liked brands that's out there. Kodak, with 135,000 employees, files bankruptcy in 2012. Why? Because of the smartphone. Nobody's using film anymore to take pictures. We're now taking digital photographs. So Kodak goes out of business. And the year they go broke, Instagram, 18 months old, 13 employees, is sold for $1 billion, having developed technology that Kodak invented, digital photography. So we need to make sure that the investment recommendations we're giving to our clients are for companies that will succeed in the 21st century, as opposed to companies that were successful in the 20th.
Well, Rick, your research and your book are really groundbreaking. And it seems like an overwhelming complexity of changes that we have to face. Where do we start?
Well, selfishly, I'll tell you, start with my book. basically, what I'm...
Having read your book, I totally agree.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, David. My book, The Truth About Your Future, is designed for people who are completely unfamiliar with this subject, who are unfamiliar with exponential technologies, who've never even heard of the singularity, who don't know what the blockchain is. If these terms are all unfamiliar to you, that's who my book is for. And the book is in two parts. At first, it explains the technologies of what is all this stuff. And then in part two, what does it all mean for our personal finances, for investments, insurance, mortgages, college and career, leisure and recreation, estate planning. So it explains, here's what it all means. And so that's a great place to start. There's a huge amount of info on the web. And once you get exposed to this, you never look at the world the same way twice. You begin to realize that this technology has been around you forever. There are news stories on a daily basis. You just don't notice it. You think it's interesting. Oh, yeah, I heard about self-driving cars. But what you don't realize is that self-driving cars means the end of what occupation, David? You tell me. Self-driving cars means the end of what occupation?
Well, it certainly means the end of me driving my own car.
Sure, but from a jobs perspective, what job goes away?
Parking attendant.
Sure, parking attendant goes away. Cab driver goes away. Bus driver goes away. But you know who else goes away? Chiropractors.
Yeah,
think about that.
I know that you have a pretty exhaustive outline of a lot of professions that are going to either change or disappear as a result of exponential technology.
And it's hard to anticipate where the dominoes stop falling. When I tell people that chiropractors are under threat by self-driving cars, what? Think about it. Most chiropractors are in business to serve people with back injuries, and most back injuries are caused by car accidents, rear-end collisions. No car accidents means no back injuries, which means no business for chiropractors. So it's hard to tell where the dominoes stop falling. And this is why you need to start looking at things saying, oh, that's a really neat announcement. I wonder what it means for me. And that's the approach as a financial planner I try to take. I'm not a technologist. I'm certainly not a scientist. My perspective of it is, as a financial planner, what changes do I need to make so that we can still achieve the goals that we have for ourselves and our families? That's really the point. So where should you start? Start with my book, because in the back of my book, I have a big bibliography of all the other books that I think you should read. There are lots of websites that have this info as well. And once you begin to expose yourself to it, you begin to realize, wow, this is something to pay attention to now. Like everything else in the world of personal finance, the sooner you pay attention to it, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, I think also, when you start paying attention to it and you read your book and you start reading the other books and the other sources that you cite, then it also will change people's perspective about how they're going to think about things like employment, entrepreneurship, leadership, and their own actions and behaviors in lots of other aspects of their lives beyond personal finance and investment.
Yes, I agree.
Rick, given all the exhaustive research that you did, What do you think is the biggest change that people aren't prepared for?
I would say that it's really the Luddites that are the biggest issue. I have a chapter in the book called The Dark Side, which talks about all the problems and the negative side of things that can occur. And in my view, the biggest risk, the biggest danger are the Luddites. This is a term that emanates out of England in the 1800s when weavers were threatened by automation, by the loom, which is a way to automate the manufacture of clothing and textiles. And seeing the jobs being threatened, they would break into the factories and destroy the looms. And they came to be known as Luddites, named after a gentleman named Ludd who led these riots. And a Luddite is now a reference to people who resist technology. What we find is that people are often afraid of what they don't know, what they don't understand, and people are afraid of change. And when you talk to people about automation and robotics and artificial intelligence, there's a natural reaction of fear, of saying, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to live in a world like that. And Luddites can be very effective at slowing down the rate of technological change. If you want a current example of Luddites in action, look at taxi drivers around the world. There have been riots. There have been demonstrations in Brazil, France, Italy, Spain, of taxi drivers blocking interstate highways, blocking access to international airports because they're objecting to Uber. They see Uber as a threat to their livelihood because Uber charges much less than a cab does. And cab drivers are very much threatened by this. We've seen states and cities create laws prohibiting Airbnb because the hotel industry is threatened by Airbnb. So we've seen people say, I'm afraid you're going to ruin my job, and therefore, selfishly, I'm going to do what I can to prevent you from moving forward. Nobody cares about cab drivers except cab drivers. I mean, all the customers who use cabs are perfectly happy to get into an Uber car or one offered by Lyft or any of the other ride-sharing services. So Luddites can cause governments to create regulations or legislation to prevent technological advances. They can slow things down. They can't stop it, but they can slow things down, often to the detriment of the rest of the community. So we have to be on guard that we are likely to see significant social unrest as we go through this disruptive state. You know, it's one thing to go from travel agent to app developer, but in that middle period, when you're out of work as a travel agent and you're not yet hired as an app developer, you're threatened economically, financially, perhaps emotionally. This could affect your marriage. It could affect your children. And that stress can be expressed through demonstrations and even rioting. And I would be fully expecting to see those kinds of things occurring over the next 10 or 20 years.
Hey, Rick, in addition to buying your book, is there one last tip that you can offer to help us understand how we can do a better job of embracing change and perhaps be more successful and happier as a result?
Yes, I would encourage you to take a look at Singularity University's website, su.org. I graduated from their executive program in 2012. They later asked me to join their faculty and to become an investor in the university, both of which I've done. Singularity University was founded by Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamandis. Peter is the founder of the XPRIZE Foundation. He's responsible for the first private space flight that occurred. Ray Kurzweil, regarded as the Albert Einstein of our generation, he's on the faculty of Harvard and now director of engineering at Google. Many consider him the smartest man on the planet. These two gentlemen created Singularity University. It's kind of like a ground zero, the corner hub for everything going on in the exponential technology world. There's a massive amount of data, information available there that can really broaden your perspective. The faculty there is incredible, and the amount of information available there, all of it for free, can be of tremendous value to you as you begin your own exploration into exponential technologies.
That's a great tip. And it was a pleasure for me to have Salim Ismail from Singularity University on this show some time ago.
Yeah, Ismail's a friend of mine. He's a fabulous guy, brilliant gentleman. And yeah, I'm sure he gave you a great interview.
It was a great episode. Well, Rick, thanks so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today. It's been a great time discussing all the work that you're doing, really groundbreaking work. How can listeners get a copy of your book, learn more about you, and follow you?
Well, the book's available at booksellers everywhere, The Truth About Your Future. You can also go to truthaboutyourfuture.com, and you can visit us at my email, rickedelman.com.
That's great. Thanks again, Rick. My guest today has been Rick Edelman, the founder and executive chairman of Edelman Financial Services. Thanks again, Rick, for joining us.
Anytime, David. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.